Welcome to the Minisode, Daniel.
Hey, Hilda. I'm blessed to be here.
It was such a wonderful conversation. I feel blessed, too. You really gave me some food for thought. But one thing that left me hanging was wondering, were the chickens enough to help you rebuild your health? Take us back to that time when you were reading Folks This Ain't Normal on the back porch.
No, not at all. Absolutely not. 100 chickens did not save my life. I think great change starts with clarity. And most of the time, clarity is a very simple shift. One of my favorite authors, John Ralston Saul, has this quote, "Blessed is they whose clarity causes disquietude." It's a beautiful quote, but in this case, this little moment of clarity caused not disquietude, but great amounts of health. I mentioned in the full episode that, you know, when we started raising our own foods, we started caring about local foods and caring about local farmers who, you know, raise those local foods, and we started farming it. And that was a huge moment. But there's a huge aspect of the story that I'm skipping over. You know, I was a mathematics and computer science major in college, and so that's the way my mind works. And I started to associate the foods in which I ate to the feelings in which I had. And, you know, I'd go through periods, like I said in the episode, where I would lose 80 pounds in a singular month, and then we would work for the next 2 months to gain the weight back, because if it happened again, you know, 80 pounds, alpha of 80, I would waste away. And that's when I read Price's Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, became a member of Weston A. Price. That's not a plug. That actually, I cannot tell you. And I have long been a huge fan. I'll just say it this way. But we started to understand not just about local food and local farms, but the actual reality of those foods mattered, right? Like a piece of broccoli, nutrient dense or not, raw or not, processed or not, is not broccoli for everyone. That we have this epigenetic reality of heritage, we have the chemicals that we're exposed to in our early youth and our late adolescence. Like, there's many more facets, a lot more complexity to food than just broccoli is good, Cheetos are bad. Mm-hmm. And so my wife and I, we did for 2 years straight, again, this is mathematically oriented, but I would journal. I have many journals, and I still have them. How I felt physically, emotionally, and spiritually before a meal, during a meal, and after a meal, as open and as outrageous and as, if I can say, naked as possible. Just outrageous, just get all these thoughts down physically, emotionally, and spiritually, you know, around that meal. And I would document the ingredients and the location in which those ingredients within that meal were grown. So like, it's ketchup, maybe it was a local apple cider vinegar with local tomato ketchup, or maybe it was an industrially produced, like whatever it was. And then after 2 years of doing this, obviously along the way we were learning, but then I built this actual computer program that associated every physical, spiritual, and emotional, positive, neutral, negative feeling, they were all ranked with all of these foods and where they were produced and everything else. And then it spit out a 21 ingredient food list, which also included where I could obtain those foods. Like, for instance, maybe I was bad on tomatoes, but good on tomatoes that I grew, something like this.
Ah.
Or maybe it was Roma tomatoes instead of cherry tomatoes, and the Roma tomatoes were good if I grew them, but the cherry tomatoes could be fine as long as they were organic and non-GMO from the supermarket. A lot of complexity there.
Uh-huh.
And then I immediately changed my diet to those 21 items, and about for the last maybe 8.5 years, 9 years, we've been on that diet. Progressively, we add new ingredients every month, you know, so like most recently we added back in horseradish and nothing negative has happened. You know, and sometimes it does, and I'm down for a month and I have very little energy, or I lose a bunch of weight or something like this. But there's a whole other side to the story of like hyper intensity of the data.
Wow. And you were talking earlier about how multifaceted the whole food web is, and of course, how multifaceted your condition was. But I couldn't help but wonder, Daniel, some people say that we don't have genetic conditions necessarily. And I'm not trying to point to your parents, but more to the environment in which you were raised. Like, I wonder if that was what led to the various bone issues you had with the ball and joint sockets and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Nicole Masters is one of the soil scientists in the regenerative ag space. Brilliant, brilliant, and wonderful woman. She has her story, which is based in paraquat, right?
Yes.
Just being exposed to paraquat, the herbicide, the modern herbicide all around her. I have no doubt that although my parents really tried and they did their best, and my goodness, like my childhood versus many of the childhoods of my peers is unprecedented, both in spirituality and energy and emotions and physicality and nutrition and food and everything else. But yes, no, absolutely. Epigenetically, from my heritage, mixed with chemicals in the landscape,
all the things.
I mean, it goes it goes back to why we can't be regenerative unless we're working to all be regenerative. It's fence line photos. We need to deconstruct that model. Because if you think I'm growing chemical-free regenerative beef on my land where my neighbor is spraying pesticides from a helicopter, right? Like this is a laughable matter. Right, it's a complete joke. Right. It's just like in my health, right? My parents could have led me down a perfect pathway, but glyphosate could have still been in the landscape. Paraquat could have still been in the landscape. There's a lot of external stressors. We have a community problem. Regenerating the soil is very easy. Done it on all over the world, right? But regenerating the community, the human community around that soil is much harder. Yeah.
But I love your simple charge to the listener and to me, you know, to start where we're at, to also even the methodical way in which you approached your health. But you weren't just all in your rational mind because you were exploring your emotions, the spirits, all the things that make up who you are and how you were interacting with the food. I find that fascinating. I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who has been so methodical and yet also thinking with the right side of their brain too, approaching their well-being. It's really cool.
I appreciate that. But I also think rationality isn't alien to Mother Earth. I think that's a very important concept. I think a lot of the times when we modern humans, we think rationally, we believe we're thinking reductionistly, right? We're thinking overly scientific, and we see the science and we see scientists today, especially modern scientists today, and we say, oh, that's bad. I don't want to be a part of that group. But Mother Earth, I think it's ridiculous to think that she only is a poet or a philosopher or a lover or a complex or like, there's a lot of life to be had. And in that life, the grand complexity of all comes together for the, you know, elevation of all, for the health of all. And so I think there's absolutely a place for mathematics. I think science has an amazing role to play, just as much as like, you know, go out, sit, you know, here at the pasture right in front of my house and just breathe for 2 hours. Right? That's also unbelievably important. And breath works and meditation and energy and like it all has to matter, else, in my opinion, none of it does. It all has to connect, else, you know, it's totally tangential.
Wow. Well, speaking of connecting, I can't wait to see you. I'll come out to your Tim Shell wildland and hang out sometime. And I'm really, really grateful for your time today. Appreciate it, Daniel.
Absolutely. Thank you, Hilda. It's been a pleasure.